5 seconds.
We're not in a hurry. Don't worry. Okay.
Okay, you're good now.
Yeah. Can we call this meeting to order? We're expecting a few more members, but they're not here yet, so let's call this meeting to order, and if we could all stand. And Nick, can you do the pledge for us?
I certainly will. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We could all on the board review the review the minutes from an old business point of view when everybody's done. If we could have a motion and approve those, if everybody's ready for that.
Chairman, I move the minutes be accepted as presented.
Second.
Are you ready, Nick?
Yes.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. The ayes have it. Minutes are approved. If we now, the next step is we're expecting a report from the Secretary of State, and Andrew's here, and boy, this is going to be exciting.
Got a lot to discuss today, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
The first thing that's on the agenda to discuss is an increase in fees. As you know, the Secretary of State is obligated to approximate the fees and the revenues that are actually, or to approximate the revenue to, or pardon me, the other way around, to approximate the fees to the revenue we actually receive in operating our bingo operations. That's actually codified in 12.9.103.5. For the benefit of those people listening online, I'm going to go ahead and read the statute. The statute says total revenue generated by the collection of such fees approximates the direct and indirect costs incurred by the licensing authority in carrying out its duties under this article, and the amounts of the fees need to be viewed annually. The next thing I'm going to show you here is actually a chart that, so you guys can see what I'm looking at when I'm looking at having to adjust the fees. The green bars there on the left actually show the revenue. As you can see, revenue is going down progressively from fiscal year 03 to 04 through to fiscal year 06 to 07. What you see there with the blue bars is the actual expenditures that the department is actually spending regulating bingo. You can see that in 03 and 04 it's fairly high, and then 06 and 07 it's also spiking. Fiscal year 04-05 it actually plateaued. Fiscal year 05-06 it started to rise. So what we're seeing is 05 to 06 there was a rise, 06 to 07 there was a spike, and right now looking at the numbers for this fiscal year we're starting to see that same spike. So as a result we're going to raise, we need to raise fees to increase our revenue. The red bars there actually indicate how much we would need to raise fees to actually plateau, or actually make the fees and the expenditures be about the same. So this is what the remedy is going to be. What we're going to do is we're going to raise revenue by doing an across-the-board fee increase. We're going to be raising fees on manufacturers, suppliers, licensees, and landlord licensees. However, I don't want you guys to feel as though you are bearing the entire burden for this. We're going to meet you halfway on this one. We're actually going to lower our expenses in the department by reallocating some of our staff. Now, as far as when the fees are actually going to go into effect, right now I'm looking at the fourth quarter of the fiscal year. So next spring is probably when it will happen. You'll be receiving notices within the mail, and all licensees will be receiving notices, everybody who's involved with bingo, sometime within the next month and a half. But I want to make sure that I have the numbers accurate before I send those out, and I want to game out a few different strategies. So that is the fee increase. I don't know if you wanted to start discussing the sunset report, Mr. Chairman.
Before we do that, do you have financial reports from the quarter?
I don't have financial reports from this quarter yet.
From the last quarter?
From the quarter that just ended?
No, the quarter before.
From fiscal year
07, the second quarter report.
Second quarter he's talking about.
No, I don't have any, unless we included them in the
packet. No, I didn't put that in the packet.
No, we don't have them, but we can send them along to you if you guys would like to take a look at
those. So we don't know where we were revenue-wise or where we were profit-wise or all of those things.
As far as first
quarter. Has anybody looked at them as a question, Rudy? Have you?
Not the exact numbers, but we were down, so there's no doubt about that. But we can send those reports to you. I don't know the exact figures.
Thank you. Thanks, Rudy. I have a question regarding the fee increases.
Sure.
I know you said you're going to work on it. One of the things we discussed last year, and I know that when Mike was talking about it, he was going to be some number of dollars short, like $150,000 or something like that. And one of the things that was happening is the and that's happening this licensing season is the fees for the charities would be increased to $100. Mm-hmm. Is that true for now? For this coming relicensing, the fees will increase from $6,250 to $100.
Yes.
Is that part of this is that part of this fee increase that you're speaking about?
No, there's going to be an additional fee increase.
I understand that, but you don't have the breakdown of what we're at.
I don't have the breakdown right now because what I want to do is game out a few different strategies so I can make it as minimal as possible.
Okay.
To do that, I need to look at the staff that I'm reallocating,
uh-huh.
determine what they're making, also look at the different fees that we're required to pay for having that staff member assigned to our bingo division.
Yes.
As soon as I have a better idea for what that is, I'll have a better idea for what I'm going to do as far as adjusting the fees.
Okay. I have one other issue, but I guess we can talk about it at the Sunset Review.
Okay.
I'm just trying to think if it would be better now.
Where's Andrew?
Well,
we'll have $100, and then 2009 will be the increase.
Let me ask this again for Mr. Whitfield and Mr. Johnson and Mr. Ryan. One of the things is, over the last year since I came on the board about a year ago now, I guess, I don't remember, is whenever we're having meetings or whenever we're having things to discuss, whether it's rulemaking or whether it's just general board meetings or other kinds of things like that, it's very difficult to get that information out to the charities and others, other than it's online, okay? And we understand that the Secretary of State posts that there are meetings online. One of the things I'd like to ask is, because all the renewals for licenses are coming up, if there's any way we could change the form just by adding email address, if we could get the emails and make that a group, we could email every games manager that there's an agenda for a meeting that's coming up, even after we talk about the Sunset Report, however those things happen. But having an email address for every charity, I think, is very important to get the word out regarding what's going on.
Sure. Well, I can tell you one of the exciting things that's actually happening right now in Bingo is that we're creating an online system for actually filing reports. So, and part of that system is when we're capturing information, we'll be capturing email addresses. So we'll certainly be doing that in the future.
We do probably 50 to 80.
You requested where, Shannon? On the application, okay. Have you? Good. And so what you're saying is we do have like 40% of the addresses or 30, 20%, whatever it is. 20 to 40% of the email addresses we have.
Yeah, until they change. I'll get one the next year and nothing's changed, but I don't know if it's the same.
Right. So my question would be, whenever we're having something, whether it's a board meeting or anything else,
right.
Is it possible to use those email addresses to send out that information to all of those charities?
We can certainly look at doing that in the future, certainly.
Like, I was just trying to get a time frame future when you say future.
Well, let's discuss the Sunset Review and
okay.
discuss moving forward, and then we'll take it from there.
Okay, sounds good to me. So the next thing on our agenda is to discuss the Sunset Review, which has all come out. Has everybody had a copy of that in their hand?
I've actually got the four recommendations
on the screen.
Yeah, screen here.
Okay, and I think maybe we'll discuss everything before we discuss the Bingo Advisory Board, if we could discuss the other items first.
So I've got 1, 2, and 3 first there.
Okay. Okay. And these are things that you've put opposed deals with what the Secretary of State's office is feeling about these issues?
Exactly.
Okay. So, if we could begin, then number one, to allow licensees to conduct unlimited number of bingo occasions. We can see that the Secretary of State opposes that. Do we have any comments from the board?
The rationale for the opposition?
In this case, we felt that it was important to impose this provision because we feel if we allowed unlimited number of bingo occasions, a lot of the smaller outfits wouldn't have an opportunity to go into those bingo halls that do a good job of attracting large numbers of players.
Mm-hmm.
That was the original rationale for this provision, and we believe that rationale still exists.
As the chairman of the Bingo Advisory Board, I would have a problem with unlimited bingo games for the same reasons and for the potential of things that make Rudy's job harder.
I think we're all against things that would make Rudy's job harder.
Right. And however, one of the things that maybe we could discuss is if we had a minimum, which we have now, which is 158 games, and then maybe the legislature could say maybe we could then regulate the increase in those games by rule. Would that be a possibility? As far as how would you guys feel about that?
Well, right now we feel what we're set at right now is actually working and it's functioning quite well. So at the present time, we don't see any real need to change it.
Okay, so that's where you are on that.
But we're certainly open to any commentary regarding changing those numbers.
Okay. Since we do have some people in the public out here, if you're going to speak, however, you need to go to the microphone and give your name and give any of your input regarding number one. Don't all of you speak at once. All right. If we could then go to number two, repeal the statutory restriction on cash promotional prizes. Mr. Whitfield.
Sure. Our rationale for opposing this provision is, I'm sure as many of you remember, this was a hotly contested issue not too long ago. One of the reasons that we think it's important to put a cap on the actual cash that can be used is the people that are going to be responsible for raising this cash are the licensees. We don't want licensees to actually be taking money away from their charitable purposes, and that's why we put a cap on it.
And so you don't have a cap on, you have a cap on how much they can give away in merchandise.
Mm-hmm.
And are you not liking that they could do the same thing in cash?
Yeah, that's basically the reason. Do you want to articulate other reasons?
No, I just think many licensees feel the pressure that they have to compete with the bigger groups, and they're losing money right now. And if they go into this, I think they're going to lose more. We have licensees that talk to us all the time about doing away with progressives because they feel like they have to do it. It's not mandate that they have to do it, but they feel like it is because their competition's doing it. And they really don't have the people, they don't have the money, but they get involved with progressives. So I think the same thing may happen if we allow cash promotionals because it's giving more money away, basically, than what they're allowed to do now.
Does anybody want to comment on that besides me? I will in a second.
With halls?
I'm sorry?
Did that have anything to do with hall promotions as well?
We think that the licensees would end up footing that bill as well, either through increased rent or some other means.
So that's been happening?
We hear it's been happening, but that's what we feel would happen if it was cash. We think that may even happen with other promotionals. That somehow that's paid for by the licensee.
So what would be the difference between cash and merchandise?
Just what I said. the possibility that they'd be.
But if they can do that
cash,
already.
Right. We think that's too high now, but it's that's where it is.
The main thing that I run into, and I don't charge my organizations for promotions, is finding a product that everybody wants. And so what winds up happening is you look at cash, everybody wants cash. So if there was some way to go ahead and achieve what you guys are feeling, meaning that, because I think that it is the responsibility of the halls, if you are in a commercial bingo facility, to go ahead and help your charities as much as you can. So to go ahead and restrict the hall from helping, I don't think works either. That makes sense?
That's your right, your opinion.
Well, it's more than an opinion, Rudy. It's an actual fact. In other words, for example, if we're giving away TVs at different sessions to promote a session, the groups don't get involved with helping to finance those televisions. The same is true for other things that go up to 100 or 200 or trips to Las Vegas or any of those kinds of issues. The groups are not involved with paying for any of that. They are involved, however, like we are giving away a car at two of our bingo halls, and they were involved with paying for part of, with helping with the promotion on part of that, which we talked to you guys about how to go about that. The hall put in a significant amount of money over whatever the groups put in, but that's a whole different issue in regards to how much money was being spent. But generally speaking, as far as Dave's halls and my halls, and we'll ask about John, your hall, and any others, the groups are not involved with, normally when it's a normal promotion, are not involved with being charged or asked to be charged for those kinds of promotions. I'd like to hear from some charities regarding that we have here.
And isn't there a spot on the lease agreement for that?
Yes.
You know, I mean, certainly I think that we would be opening to looking at what you're talking about. If you would like to use cash promotional, like, as a means of bringing in groups, and you can show that you would be
players,
spending the cash yourself and that it would not end up affecting the charities, then I would certainly be interested in looking at any data you can provide.
So
the reason that we're opposing this right now is what we see eventually happening is that cash could be a very popular thing that's bringing in groups, but eventually somebody's going to have to start footing the bill for that cash. And my guess is that over time what's going to happen are the fees that you're charging licensees to actually use the hall is going to increase. So as a result, less and less money is going to their charitable purpose.
Well, I can understand that what you're saying. I can give you examples for from the turn of the century bingo and also the bingo company. We spend in actual promotion dollars, the groups pay nothing of this. In promotions, we spend somewhere between $25,000 and $50,000 a year in promotions, mm-hmm. giving away promotions to draw in groups.
And you spend that on merchandise, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay.
And so I'm giving you real numbers now. And the charities are not involved, and that's separate from this whole car issue that we're dealing with. The charities are not involved with any of those kinds of fees on their rent. Okay. Or any other promotion that they're doing, any other way that they're going to pay for that promotion. They're not involved with that. And I think that's true with Dave's hall as well.
Yep.
Is that true with your hall, John?
That, we've been doing this since at least 8 years.
Okay.
The same types of promotions. Before we were giving away cash and we had to change to merchandise. But we did go ahead and the rent hasn't gone up. It hasn't changed.
Or would you say that you're drawing the same numbers with merchandise that you were drawing with cash?
No way.
What sort of items are you giving away?
We do Walmart certificates. We do TVs, plasmas.
Right.
We did cars as well, and the groups were not involved. We've done a number of giveaways. that have, you know, you hope that they're working, you know, and when you hear what other numbers are comparatively, I wouldn't be spending it if I didn't think it was working.
Right.
You just used the word hope. But does anybody have any definitive data?
Yes.
Show that we spent this much on promotions and we see this increase on
the point is, why should it bother you if I'm making money? I'm for profit, right?
All we're concerned about.
Right, no, 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 and I understand that as well, but if there's no increase.
Okay, let me ask a group or two, if I can do that, if I could.
Yeah,
we have a couple charities here, besides what the ones I know about. Tom, can you come up to the microphone? This is Tom Bednart. We put him on the list to try and put him on the board, but he's the president of the Colorado Youth Basketball Association.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's your name?
I'm Tom Bednart, and I'm a games manager for Colorado Youth Basketball, and we've been running bingo games for over 10 years. Various halls throughout history, and we're currently at the turn of the century. And with respect to promotions, what would you like to speak to? Not exactly sure.
What I'd like to speak to is if the hall is doing a promotion for you, whether it's a television or a Las Vegas trip or specifically for your charity, and normally you don't pay any money, I'm assuming.
Yeah, that's true, and there is a significant increase in attendance for that specific event, and it is beneficial to the groups. Participating in promotions is something I don't really like doing. You know, the car thing we're doing, and you know, time will tell if that's a benefit to us. I believe it will be, but normal promotions that the hall does are certainly beneficial to the groups.
And do you have any kind of ballpark numbers of attendance or dollars or anything like that when those things happen?
Certainly, it depends on the promotion, but. There's, you know, it's got to be at least a 20% increase in revenues per specific promotion for that particular date. Say we're just giving away a television set, I would say the revenues would be up minimally 20%.
What about a trip to somewhere, Las Vegas?
Trips are even larger.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't have hard data for you, but I know that. Historically, that the promotion does benefit the group financially. Yes,
and I can provide that.
So okay, thanks, Tom.
Start a promotion, I can provide the amount of people that come in for the first session. Actually, Andy from Bingo Docs has started up a couple of my groups, and you know, with the computer system, and she has been there. If we go ahead and do these promotions, everybody is constantly calling, not only what is the group promotion, what's the hall progressive or promotion at? What are we doing? They want to know. I mean, it's an added draw, and I think that every single thing that a commercial bingo hall can do to help their groups is very important.
Yeah, but that's a one-time thing. They come for that, and then when that promotion is over with and the big jackpot is over with, you don't see them again until you have another promotion or another big jackpot.
Typically, when answer...
But you hope that you keep some of those players.
That's a very good word, hope.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But the point is, at that point, it's the strength of the group to go ahead. If you go ahead and you start up, we do giveaways when a group starts. We do giveaways a couple of weeks in to get them to keep the players coming, but we do constant promotions. And I think that it's important for the hall to do their part.
That's true. Whenever there's a group struggling at our halls, if they're struggling with attendance and profit and things like that, we look at their numbers and see what we can do to help them. And then we run promotions to try and increase their revenue. And we do it enough times so that it becomes consistent, so that they can raise their general attendance level. It may not be as high as the night or the day that the promotion is given away, but from the time it began to the time that we're done, their attendance generally has increased from when they were doing very poorly. And that's some of the reasons that we do that, is to try and strengthen the groups and their position from a profitability point of view. And I think you need to hear that, because you are saying the opposite. We're trying to make sure the groups are profitable, and if they're not, there's no point in doing bingo. Okay. And so if we do the things that are necessary to make them profitable from promotion points of views and running good halls and having them run good games, then that's what's going to keep people coming to their game.
Well, I think that's good, but as a business, can you afford to do that without starting your groups to subsidize your promotion?
Yes, it's part of our overhead, and we can't afford not to do it.
Okay, that's good. I think there was a bill in the legislature last session that would require all licensees to give a portion of their fees to promotions, to big promotions like the year.
Well, bigger. It was advertising. We were talking about advertising, not promotions. Advertising. Yeah.
Which is a form of promotion.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a different word.
Yeah.
But if it's working, great. You know, but if it is, under the current system, why force money out of the licensee's pocket when they're going downhill already?
Well, we're not.
Maybe that's why it failed. I don't know.
Yeah.
Part out of the lease agreement.
That's what.
And all I'm saying is, what we fear is that if a business does that, and I don't know, it's good to have licensees here to speak to that,
mm-hmm.
because sometimes they tell us different things away from the meeting.
Yeah.
So it's good to have them involved. I would love to have Warren here
yeah.
to say what their actual experience is. But good. Our fear is that money eventually comes out of the licensees.
I understand the fear. I understand what you're saying, Rick. I'm just trying to give you a...
That's where we're going.
Right.
Don't the licensees call and complain if the hall is squeezing them?
It's a business. We can't do anything about that. They're your landlord, and they're your tenant. We don't interfere in that.
There's some rules about that.
Tell them that they have yeah. to be involved in the promotion, right?
Yeah. No.
We don't.
Yeah.
No,
we
us,
can't.
As a hall owner.
No, you can't force them to.
That's right. So let me have Annie here speak also.
You're seeing something different is what you're saying.
No, we hear different things, but I'm
okay.
Maybe that's not happening.
Okay.
Annie DeZorts from Bingo Docs. I was involved in a charity, and we started to do another. I'm not involved in a charity right now. I was. Our charity quit doing bingo. However, I've seen it all over the state due to my company. I've seen it in Bishop Dan's Hall. I've seen it in David's Hall. I've seen it in John's Halls. That promotions, especially, I've seen it personally with my group when we started doing a Wednesday night that currently had not been done. If the landlord promotes us on Wednesday nights, we made a success of it. Whether it be for two sessions, three sessions, four sessions. Second of all, as a bingo player all over the state of Colorado, I would much rather win money than a TV. I don't need another TV. A Walmart gift certificate is fine, but in my opinion, that's the same as cash. You're just limiting me to where I can spend it. But if I was going to go in and play for a promotional, you know, whether it be a car, whether it be a television or whatever it is, I would rather get cash and or get a gift certificate than another TV. I don't need a TV. Yes.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm done. Ready.
Okay. Maybe the solution is what you said a moment ago, is to take it out of the statute and regulate that and rule how much landlords can offer for promotion, and whether it's cash or merchandise, and how much licensees can offer promotion, whether it's merchandise or cash. And because the biggest draw we ever get to our office is when there's a rule change up for grabs
mm-hmm.
or up for vote. So maybe that's the way to do it, is to get the licensees involved and have them say what they want to participate in and what they want their landlords to do, and rule. And it's much easier to deal with and rule than in statute.
I don't disagree with that unless we get it in the statute anyway.
Well, if I have it in statute, if it works, you know, fine. Leave it alone. If it doesn't work, another rule here.
We on the board think it's great because we were heavily involved with trying to have those statutes come to pass that said these things would be by rule, because it's a lot easier to deal with than having to change the law every year. Yeah, I agree. And so we don't, normally the board doesn't have any problem with putting things in rulemaking rather than statute.
All right, well, we'll critically take a look at it. We'll certainly, I mean, we're hearing what you guys are saying, and we're hearing what you're saying, and we'll take a look at this again. Certainly, if you can, I think probably what we'll end up doing is request that they actually repeal this portion of the statute altogether, and then we can really hash this out when we're doing a rulemaking hearing, and certainly start to critically look at numbers. And if you can provide a case that, you know, giving away cash giveaways is really going to drive up your numbers, then we'd certainly be willing to listen to that.
The hardest thing to do, and why I had trouble answering your question, is when we were allowed to give away cash,
right,
crowds were bigger.
But are crowds smaller now just because you can't give away cash? Are there other factors that are going
to there are a ton of factors, but it's just one of those things where I think the old way of bingo, was easier.
Right.
I think it's pretty much what Annie said. People prefer cash.
Right. What I'm hearing is that you guys believe that cash will actually drive up your numbers. But what I'm saying is that what we're talking about doing here is repealing this rule.
Yeah.
And this is something that we can...
And having a hearing on it, yeah.
When we actually do a hearing.
Okay. I think you'll find that you'll hear most of what we've been saying. That's good. So I
look forward to that. Certainly the more opinions that we can solicit on this, the better.
The better, yeah.
Do you want letters from nonprofits? Do you want...
They want to come in and tell them. They want to... We'd like to have them come in and talk to them, yeah.
The ruling and go on record.
That's right.
How they feel about it.
That's right, yeah. I agree, and that's one of the reasons I really like that email address is up to speed, so everybody could know what's really going on. You know, it's a hard task. We've tried, but it's very expensive to send out letters to everybody.
It's our experience too that rule hearings are very well attended.
Yeah,
everybody gets an opportunity to talk, and it's a very informal sort of process where we just, you know, we try to get everybody's opinion.
Yeah.
And certainly in a situation like this, when we're dealing with something that you guys feel very strongly about, and, I mean, we know that Austin feels very strongly the other way, we want to, like, garner as many opinions as possible.
I just want to throw, if I may, throw something in here. The problem with promotions, prizes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, we've got two different type of organizations that we're dealing with. We've got organizations that work and conduct their bingo in a bingo hall, a large 300-plus seating capacity, 250, 300 seating capacity. We've got our other charitable organizations that work in a smaller organization, up to 100, that use it in their own home, their own facility. It's difficult to be able to be in a competitive posture when you can only seat 150 people versus a hall that can seat 300 people. So therefore, if a hall can seat 300 people, they can, quote, typically have a larger prize to give away than a hall that can only, or somebody that conducted at their own home that can only give away, seat a smaller capacity. So I think in that way, this thing is... kind of a negative. It's a plus for the hall because they can, quote, seat more people. Therefore, the prizes for the organization to conduct bingo there can be, quote, larger. Whereas it can't be as large for a small place. So it eliminates some of the internal competition, and that we can't, a smaller organization can't compete with a big bingo hall.
Are the smaller organizations going ahead and running 7 days a week?
Doesn't make any difference if they're running 7 days a week. We're talking about an individual bingo session. I'm talking about an individual bingo session. If you run an individual bingo session and you have this promotional prize, whether it be conducted for 7 days during the week or for 7 weeks during the quarter, they cannot give away as large a prize because they have a smaller capacity.
Let me say something about that, Nick. Hold on a second, Dave. Listen to me comment on that. My impression is, hearing what Austin has to say and hearing what we have to say, is Austin runs a game. I don't know if it's once a week or twice a week, Austin. How often? Once a week. And what he said the whole year is his attendance is wonderful and he has no problem with attendance and it's going just fine. And that's happening even though many bingo halls are doing promotions at other times. And so we can't have it both ways. If he's doing just fine and he doesn't worry about the promotion, that's great. And the other halls that have groups that aren't doing that good and they try to help them increase their attendance, then that's good. So it's great for everybody. So this thing works no matter who it is. And the groups that are doing one game a week or whatever they are whether it's the Elks or whether it's that school or whatever it is, are capable of doing whatever they want to do. It's not an issue. It's an issue of are they profitable? And my impression from what Nick and Austin have said about their groups is they're profitable regardless of what the other bingo halls are doing.
Mr. Chairman, what I would like to see is a hard copy, hard facts of your attendances during a promotion and during a regular game without promotion. I'd like to see the hard facts on it in black and white.
We'll try and get you some of that, Austin. Don's up here wanting to say something. So can I have your name?
John Smith with Bingo John. Planet. I'd like to address Nick's comment about the large halls and the small halls. Granted, the larger halls, the commercial halls, can seat more people than what most of the fraternal halls can, but that's assuming that those halls are full all the time. The reality is that you're still only getting 80 people, 100 people, sometimes 60 people, even in commercial halls. The fact that you can seat more doesn't mean that you're bringing in more money. You're still bringing in X number of people. And I think that the fraternal halls bring just as many people in their halls as the commercial halls are. So the dollars you've got to work with are pretty much the same. If anything, they're more for the commercial halls because you've got more expenses than what the fraternal halls do. They've got their own environment that they control. And that doesn't happen always in a commercial hall.
Thank you, John.
I thought that, you know, when I'm going ahead and looking at any of the things that we talk about for bingo, I try to look at it as, will it benefit a nonprofit? Period, end of story. And if the thing, and I understand that you don't want the groups to have to pay more money. The point is, if it's something that's working and they're saying, wow, we want to keep this going, and the hall says, you know what, I can't afford it anymore, at that point it's their decision whether or not they want to be involved. So you have a situation where I'm almost 100% sure that you're going to have at a rule meeting a situation where people are going to, you're going to have, we don't like promotions. And why don't you like promotions? Because their crowd is going up at one time, which is the objective, to get their crowd up, and that means someone else's crowd is down. And it's the same principle with the progressive. It works the same exact way. It would be great when your progressive is at $15,000 and you had that crowd the whole time you were running your progressive. It doesn't happen. That's the whole point of a promotion, is to get those jumps. And hopefully, if every single time you do it, even if you only keep four of those people, hopefully over time your crowd will go up. And that's the whole thing that I thought we were trying to do, was try to promote and make the groups money.
I agree.
If I may, Mr. Chairman.
Sure, Nick.
To address both of these, and particularly with John. John, let's talk about he and I. We're competitors in Loveland. Our bingo hall, or our facility, will only hold 145, 142 by fire standard. And his will hold, 250. So if we were to have a bingo on the same night, as an example, and let's say we just made the criteria for every person theoretically, since I can only seat 140 people, my prize is going to be less than what his would be for that group, for that particular group, because in theory, If it's optimum seating, they can seat 250, 300 people. So they would, quote, draw more people. Then, and so therefore, it kind of, because they play in a bingo hall, or whatever it is, because they have a larger facility, is it against me because I don't have a larger facility, or should I go get a larger facility? But the thing is, it eliminates some of the competition by saying, we are bigger, we are twice the size as you are, so theoretically we can offer twice the amount of a prize than you can on a similar night.
If you were going ahead and charging per head?
Charge per head, but let's say if basically you're trying to say, what is a promotion for?
To pack the house.
To pack
the
house.
You want to fill every single seat
now,
in the house.
Okay, so let's say we're going to charge $1,000. He's giving away $1,000, I'm giving away $1,000. In theory, he can get more people into his house than I can get into my house. So therefore, his cost per capita to put on that promotion is less than our cost per capita. See what I'm trying to say?
No, because the point is, the hall is paying for the promotion.
Yeah.
So what winds up happening is the nonprofit is the one that benefits ultimately.
The hall, okay. Who is the hall? I cannot have a hall promotion. I'd have to go to a bingo hall, pay you X number of dollars per session in order to have a promotion. I am not a hall. I cannot have that type of a promotion.
Well, is he not allowed to give away a promotion? So that's what the problem is. You want to be able to give away a promotion as well.
Well, yeah. Well, not necessarily.
Okay.
Competition.
Yeah. May I have Annie?
Well, speaking on, I think that you're talking two different things, because you're not doing your internal, I understand what you're saying, but with the respect of John Smith, it's him that's giving the money away, not the charity that's giving the money away. So it's coming out of his pocket as opposed to the nonprofit's pocket. And you're speaking on behalf of both, I mean.
It's one pocket.
It's one pocket.
One pocket. Yeah,
right.
You can't do that.
And so are you speaking on behalf of the charity, you being a charity, or you being a bingo facility?
We'll move on to the next one here shortly.
Yeah, I was speaking on a bingo charity
in
their own facility.
But I think one of the things I want to tell you is this. The majority of the promotions that are done are somewhere between $100 and $200. Okay, it's a television, it's some other small item. And we're talking about every now and then we hear about big items, but that's very few and far between. So for somebody from the Elks Lodge to say we can't give away a TV is just bogus. But that isn't the issue. The issue is when we give away those promotions, we increase the number of people, as Tom Bednart said, he gets maybe a 20% increase. We're not talking about going up from 85 people to 350 people. This is a matter of a standard ratio that takes place when promotions happen. And we can give you those kinds of numbers, and we will give you those kinds of numbers, especially if we have a rule hearing about that. And so I think that we should move on, because I think a rule hearing would do that, except John Amon, I think, wants to say something before we're done.
John Amon, Quality Bingo Supply. I'd like to back up. When we changed the law this last time, steps were taken to modify that bill to include promotions for licensees who operate in their own home.
Yes.
In fact, 12.9.102.5(b)(1), a licensee may conduct a prize promotion on the licensed premises, whether such premises are rented or owned by the licensee. So there were steps taken to try and keep licensees in their own place and bingo halls on the same footing. So I just wanted to clear up that misconception.
Thank you, John. Are we ready to move on to number? Oh, Patrick would like to say
one more comment. I would make, in my experience, that people like the Elks that play in Loveland and the American Legion, tiny little hall in Florence, Colorado, that the folks that play in their own halls don't see any need for a promotion, because you know,
because they're captive almost, you know.
They're doing good.
Yeah. Right, and that's what we keep hearing.
The audience, is that, I mean, I,
kind of.
Why do you think, I mean, the point is, why do you think that they're doing so well?
Their game is their promotion.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're doing probably one session a week or something like that.
Their game, so they fill their
yeah, and they're faithful, and the customers are faithful because they like it.
Because
yeah.
They don't use TEDs.
Okay, well, that's great. They don't use TEDs. That's fine, you know. Jeez.
No, but the point is those are the things that I think, you know, when we sit here and every other meeting we've had waste time, this is stuff that's important. That's exactly what we're here to do, is try to figure out how to make these nonprofits money.
And keep the public safe at the same time.
If this is something...
If I may, uh-huh, answer that, and I know we're kind of deviating from the thing. To make, I believe, I believe Austin believed the same way. If you put on games that your people like, or that the people like, and you find out what they want, you do their things, and that's one thing. The other thing is that it's your volunteers. We have found out that with a set group of volunteers, people with friendly faces, people that are willing to, that are working and know the players, know what their requirements are, and you don't have to change volunteer this week, that week, whatever it may be. We have found out that those are what are successful as far as public relations with our crowd. And I'm trying to help you with that.
Right.
Is that with you, I don't know how it works with your organizations, or the ones that come to the bingo halls, but if you don't keep your same workers on a weekly basis so that they get to know each other, I think you're going to have a problem.
Yeah. We would all agree with you about that. I think that's a given.
I mean,
okay?
Number one, I know that my nonprofit North Glen High School band has one of the largest band programs, and they would love to have extra sessions per week. Do they have the same parents every week? Nope. Would they be more successful if they did? But the point is I thought when we make a rule, we're supposed to be looking at nonprofits as a whole, not at a nonprofit. You've got to look at a nonprofit. And unfortunately, at that point, if it is more beneficial to run in your own hall, that's what people are going to eventually do. Or if it's more profitable to be in a commercial hall, right, that's what people will do.
Okay.
The point is, if you could make more money than you're making right now in your own hall at a commercial hall, you would probably go.
Okay.
If the numbers were right. So the point is, there are a ton of people out there that the high school could probably run it in a gymnasium.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, they're definitely, if that is the point, that it's more profitable one way or another, I think what our objective is to try to make bingo more profitable,
okay,
as a whole.
Can we move on to number three? So just to refocus, what we've decided to do, I guess, the Secretary of State's decided to do, is to recommend that we look into that with rulemaking, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
I think we'll support a position of actually repealing the statute and starting to make some changes and adjustments in rule that can find some middle ground.
Okay. Thank you. Number three. Repeal the requirement that landlord licensees submit blueprints. Is there anybody opposed to that? Okay. So let's move on to number four. The elimination of the Bingo Advisory Board. It looks like the Secretary of State's office is for that. Can we have some comments, please?
From the board or from the licensing?
Anybody can have comments about any reason.
Can we start with that?
With the rationale?
Yeah.
We just feel as though the Bingo Advisory Board has kind of outlived its usefulness. I mean, as David said, there's a lot of these sessions are just not being used. We think that there's other ways to actually hear what is going on with licensees and landlords and manufacturers. And one of the things that we talked about with Dan and with Dawn was actually performing task force meetings. This is something that the Secretary of State is really fond of using. In a situation like dealing with the restriction on cash promotional prizes is the type of thing that we would actually devote like a task force meeting to doing. And we think a task force meeting will actually bring in more licensees and will give us a better idea for what's actually going on out there. What's more, it's not a standing sort of board meeting like this. We call a task force meeting when we have something that we actually need to discuss and something that we need to hash out. And what we do at the end of those meetings is we drop like written recommendations, and we give those written recommendations to the secretary. So he actually is focused on bingo advisory, right? Or he's focused on bingo right at that very moment. And he says, okay, this is what the licensees are thinking. This is what the manufacturers are thinking. The suppliers are thinking. And then he can make a good decision.
Okay. I'm going to comment on that, if I can. One of the things that we talked about, and having a task force, I don't think that's a bad idea. However, I would say that one of the things that's happened since the Bingo Advisory Board's inception was that the improvement in relationships between the Secretary of State's office, all functions regarding bingo, and the bingo raffle licensees, all states of that, has improved significantly. In the days before the Bingo Advisory Board, most of the licensees were scared to death of the Secretary of State. The investigators used to come in and say, we're going to take you right away to what do they call that thing? Where you're going to be indicted. What is that? No, they want to take you to that, to the
hearing.
No. They come in and threaten you that they're going to take you into whatever. Who indicts you normally? No, from the big, you know, the jury, the grand, they used to come in and say, we're going to take you to the grand jury. That's what, when I could tell you five times when they told me that. Okay?
Not since June 2000.
Not since the Bingo Advisory Board. I'm telling you that. It used to be that way. That was the attitude. Okay? And the perception of that. We're not accusing you, Patrick. I'm just saying this was the perception prior to the Bingo Advisory Board coming in, was that it was very difficult to work with the Secretary of State's office. And so, because of the Bingo Advisory Board, the relationships, especially over the last number of years, since Rudy and Mike Shea and those kinds of people, has been, and Danetta probably, I think, has been significantly improved. Okay? We feel like it's that way because there was communication. We feel like it's that way because there was more things the Secretary of State's office would listen to, and vice versa. And that communication, I think, was a beneficial thing. And so, to remove what's already there, I think, is dangerous, because we don't know how long Mike Kaufman is going to be Secretary of the State. We don't know how long Andrew or Mike Shea, whoever it is going to be involved with running that office. We don't know how long Rudy is going to be the head of investigations. And when people change, things change. And to take away the legislation that allows for that, I think, is a mistake, because that can all go away just with personality. And personality conflicts and all of those kinds of things. And so that's one of the reasons that I think the Bingo Advisory Board is a beneficial organization to the Secretary of State. We've also, we looked at, what's-his-name's Sunset Report regarding this issue. I think some of the things that he stated are erroneous, because he didn't do a significant amount of investigation of what's happened in the past. And also, for months now, we've had people who have been recommended to be on the board for months and months and months. By the way, I'm going to introduce you to Steve Sellers, who's the one that's at the office now for the public. What do you call that?
Raise your electric.
Yeah, he's not affiliated. Raise your hand, Steve. so that you can meet him and all the rest of them. So all of the positions that were available are in the legislature, and they've been in there for months now, and those haven't come back. We think that there's a significant increase with who the people are that are on the board and that will be on the board to offer the Secretary of State even more effectiveness than he's ever had before regarding bingo and raffle licensing. That's my opinion, but I'm willing to hear from all the other people regarding those kinds of issues.
I agree with Dan that the open lines of communication are important, but your opening statement is exactly the reason why I feel that the advisory board hasn't worked, is because every single week we're not advising the Secretary of State. We come in with an agenda, every month or other month, whatever it winds up happening, with an agenda from the advisory board. And if we're to advise, then we need to be asked questions, and we haven't been getting those. So to go ahead and say something doesn't work before you figure out what the problem is, and it might be very possible that they don't want to, you know, there isn't a question for us that you guys need answered, you know, that you have the answers on your own, which is possible as well. I don't have the answer to that. But the lines of communication are very important to keep open. But if we are going to make a run of the board, we need to go ahead and make the board do what it was instated to do, which is answer questions to advise the Secretary of State.
Thanks, Dave. Also, I want to say, and I'm not saying these things out of a pride issue. It doesn't matter that he said you guys are a bunch of bums and slapped us in the side of the head. It doesn't matter about that. What matters is what's effective for the bingo raffle community. And so these are our opinions rather than any other agendas. John?
I'm curious, under your recommendation that would go to task force or ad hoc committees, who's going to determine how often those are going to be? Who's going to determine what that's comprised of as far as the participants and the issues? Yeah.
The way task force meetings work right now is when we see a need, and a need that's brought to us by constituents, like David is saying, if there's a situation that comes up and that thinks that this is something that needs to be vetted, we would form a task force for that reason. Right now, as it stands, we generally run task force meetings every summer. And certainly for a situation like this, we'd probably run one this summer coming up.
So it'd be one task force meeting a year?
It could be more if need be.
But who makes that determination if it's a need be? One person calls you with an issue that they'd like to have addressed. Is that sufficient, or does it need to be density of people? How do you determine that?
I mean, clearly you would need more than one person to actually suggest that we call like a task force meeting.
But how many? I mean, who makes the decision that it's an important enough issue, it's on enough people's minds, and now we're going to address it?
Well, certainly in a situation like this, when we're dealing with the statutory restriction on cash, when I'm hearing lots of people that have different opinions, I'm thinking, well, this would be a good opportunity to call a task force, break out some committees, and hear different people's points of view.
Yeah, how do you get to that? I mean, who knows that? I mean,
I don't have a set number. I don't say 15 people are calling me, so I'm going to call a task force. I'm saying this. What happens is when I report to the secretary and I say, listen, we're hearing a lot of people discuss this issue, then he's like, well, what are people saying? It's like, well, we're going to call a task force and we're going to hear the different point of views. I don't have a calculus that I apply to every situation.
Okay, what that tells me is that it depends on how impassioned someone would be about the issue. You could hear from three people that are very vehement about it. That might seem to be enough to call a task force. On another case, it might be people calling their rather concern, but they're not really impassioned about it. You need to have 15 or 20 of them call. I have a problem with that because I don't think it gives enough control over getting the issues in front of the people. And what accountability is there to those of us that are in the field and don't know how many other people are calling what the issues are? So I think if you're looking to go that direction, there needs to be some way of identifying, here's the issues that we're hearing, here's how often we're hearing them, and here's a number of task forces that we're prepared to have.
Well, let me flip the question around. Do you think that the Bingo Advisory Board is like, do you think that they're doing a good job of addressing your concerns?
I'm not qualified to answer that. I haven't been involved with the advisory board or attended the meetings enough to know that. I will be in the future, though, I can assure you of that. I think there's also some concern. As I read the review, there's a whole list of bullet points on there that are responsibilities of the advisory board. That what I've been learning is they weren't aware that those are their responsibilities. They were never educated about that. They were never taught by the Secretary of State's office, here's the things we think you're supposed to be doing, and here's the way you need to go about doing those. If that's the case, then I would take David's position also that there's questions and concerns, you address those first. You don't just abolish it. If you've got any situation that isn't working to your satisfaction, I think the best answer is try to address the issues, find out why it's not working, and massage that to make it work better. If you do that and it still fails, then maybe there's justification for dissolving it. I don't think the first option should be to just throw it out the window.
Well, let's be very clear here. It's not our office that's recommending that it actually be absolved. It was DORA. It was Bob Holden at the Department of Regulatory Agencies, who was a third party, and he came in and he talked to a lot of people in the field and he talked to a lot of people on the board. And it was after looking at those different situations and those scenarios, he decided that it should be abolished.
I would take exception with that because I tried to speak with him and he said no, he wouldn't talk to me because he only had selected people he wanted to talk to. So I would take exception with that comment.
Well, I mean, certainly when we go before the hearing officer, or in this case, we'll be going before an oversight
committee or whatever it is, yeah.
Certainly bring that up.
What is the negative? What does the licensing see as the downside to having the advisory board?
Well, I want to go ahead and come better.
If I could point out, if you look in this room right now at the board, there are people that sit on the board who are at cross purposes. There are individual business owners on the board and in the audience that have one thing in mind, and that's business financial survival. And then you have licensees who are simply trying to stay alive. And I will remind folks that this statute was established in 1959 to benefit Colorado nonprofits. And I believe that's the stance this office takes. Our main concern are the licensees that are issued the licenses. For years, there were no commercial bingo halls in Colorado. They came along as an afterthought as the market grew. And to me, it's like you've got a board where these people are simply at cross purposes. It's very
hard. Well, and part of what we should be doing here in that particular circumstance is making it clear that what doesn't benefit the nonprofit isn't going to benefit the for-profit aspect of gaming either, because the nonprofit fails, they're not going to have a customer.
Correct.
So there's things that have to be worked out and balanced when you come up with new rules and things. You have to say, okay, well, push it this far because that's going to make it work as far as the charity goes. But if you go too far, it's going to hurt the charity. It may help so there's always going to be a back and forth there.
And I think, Patrick, let me address you for a second. The Bingo Advisory Board is not a cross purposes. The Bingo Advisory Board is here to give recommendations about the bingo status and operation in the state. And the bingo operation covers a lot of different facets. But the bottom line is what Julie said. The bottom line is the suppliers, they're on the board, the hall owners, they're on the board, and the charities, they're on the board. All of those have to be first and foremost concerned about if the charities are profitable. Because if they're not, we're all out of business. Whether it's a supplier, whether it's a hall owner, whether it's the Elks doing bingo on their specific night or the school, all of them have to see bingo as a place that needs to expand and grow and make the charities profitable. That's the focus. And there's no cross purposes with that from a bingo hall or a charity. There is no cross purpose. Was not clear at all. We know what Gomes and Pizzuti say every session.
But isn't that important? I'm not sure what you mean by that.
To both sides?
Sure.
How do you make a decision?
But you guys are always looking to benefit your interest on the bottom line. And in some cases, that is going to benefit the licensees, and in others, it's not.
So, Patrick, when we have a bingo hall and we charge rent, and we give away prizes, and we give away promotions, and we advertising in on television or in newspapers, we don't have an increase of revenue. The hall does not have an increase in revenue from the charities that uses its halls. It's doing that as an expense to increase the revenue for the charities.
You know, I think we're getting off track here a little bit. Let's get back to the actual recommendation.
But that right there, what just happened, that honesty from Patrick was huge, which is something that we really don't get.
That's actually a different point of view. That's fine. But let's get back to what you actually said in the recommendation.
Okay.
You said in the recommendation that the actual board is not performing the functions that it was meant to do, and that these meetings, by and large, as David has pointed out, as Austin has pointed out, are just not productive, and that there are more productive means of doing this.
Well, there is a hot and cold, for sure, in the helpfulness of these meetings. And when there's some provisions that are going to be discussed in front of the legislature, there's some rule change that's looking to come up, it gets very focused. And that's a completely different situation than when you have nothing on the table anymore. And when that happens, then everybody's coming in with different, you know, this is the thing that's proposed, this is how it would affect the manufacturer, this is how, exactly what you said your task force would do, and that's coming from the board. So there are times when it's much more focused and times when it kind of floats looking for, you know, what's the next thing that can become something to focus on.
Sure.
But honestly, from the having been bingo for over 20 years and groups everywhere and halls everywhere and different owners and whatever, there is a gathering of information from the general operating people in bingo that happens more freely by having this board than would happen if it was a, you know, more specific and more isolated like a task force would be. And the charities that run games, the hall owners that aren't here, there's a level of assurance for them that when they bring these issues to board members that their things are going to get talked about, discussed in a forum where something can happen that can bring about change. And there is a comfort level there that they feel like there's a better communication between the general people who operate bingo and the licensing division.
Right.
And I think that would be lost with just going to a task force. And the other part of this is when we do have specific issues and changes that we want to see in the legislature and rules that come before licensing and the legislature, part of what we do address is how can those things be abused? How can that be done so that it might benefit the nonprofit even, but at the expense of the player? So that public protection element is in there. Anytime we have something that has to be, and you could hit every one of those things on that list that we do discuss and we are concerned with when we are in that setting where those types of things are on the table. So it's certainly isn't year-round, and, of course, during the times when we don't have something specific that's going on, we don't have meetings as frequently, so the resources required by the licensing division are diminished accordingly.
Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Patrick. Did you want to say something?
There is one. You have made a comment in your response to mine.
Sorry.
That, you know, that we need to expand, bingo and bingo needs to grow, and it's going to, you know. The reality of what's happening, it's a dying business. Look at it nationally and empirically, just from working in the field and doing this for 17, 18 years myself and seeing the crowds, seeing the burden that the licensees are having, trying to just whether they play in a commercial hall or play in their own demographics of who is dying in the population and who plays bingo and how few of the younger population is taking up bingo, the reality is the pie is shrinking. That's just the way it is. And I don't mean to be, I'm not trying to be negative here. I'm just trying to say, look at the reality of it. In order to survive, you have to adapt to what's changing. And go just isn't going to be around as a business that we knew 10, 12 years ago. It's not going to be.
So do we not try?
How does that?
Well, one way to try, and this is you won't appreciate this, you'll think it's extremely radical, but if you got rid of electronics in the state of Colorado, it would make a huge difference because you drove away a lot of players who are the $15 and $20 spenders, who we simply can't compete against those machines.
I don't use the machines. I don't use the machines.
Well, and you know, the thing is, we never had enough prize money in this state to justify electronics.
You know, Patrick, I think that's a discussion for a different time.
I'm sorry,
though. I know Austin had something that he wanted to say, Mr. Chairman.
The chairman.
Yes, Austin.
As regards the elimination of the board, I am completely 100% in favor of it.
I figured.
I know that you and your gang has been trying to eliminate me from this board, as well as Nick. And you're bringing in all your cohorts with you. And they're coming in for their own interests. That's all they're coming in for. It's their own interest to use the board to promote their products. And that is not working. I've been running Bingo for 39 years, more than anybody in here. 39 years, and we still have the same game, but we're not using paper. We're not using the cards with the slides. We're using paper now, and it hasn't changed our game one bit, and we are doing fine. We don't do any electronics, which is not legal. It's a backdoor entry. And that's what they use, and they conned Annetta Davidson into allowing TEDS to come into the industry, which was not right.
Okay.
So how do you think your voice would be heard?
With regards what?
Well, basically, don't you want to be heard?
Spoke.
Right.
At an advisory board meeting.
Right, but so the point is, I understand. I see what's going on. And we agree, and we don't agree sometimes. And last meeting was a perfect example of us having a conversation. And you saying, oh, I never looked at it that way. Those differing ideas are very important. But the thing is that you're to have both of you on two different sides and having that debate is what makes it important and what will probably make Bingo grow. To go ahead and eliminate that debate totally, so if, in that regard, is if you felt that you were being pushed out, or I guess that means me too, because we were on before, came on.
You're not being pushed out because you are with the gang. The two that are being pushed out is Nick and myself. And I will say one thing more. All the problems that exist, the Secretary of State's office can handle it adequately. We don't need the board to advise them what to do.
Okay.
So how long have you been on the board?
Since Natalie Meyer, when the original board was formed.
Okay, so if you feel it's such a waste of time, why did you keep...
And she was a thorn all the licensees and hall owners, and they wanted to get rid of her as quickly as possible, too.
Right, but my thing is why did you stay on for so long if you feel that it was a waste of time?
I didn't say it was a waste of time. I stayed on to see if we can make it better. But as it goes along, it is being shifted to one group of people taking over. As of the last meeting, the first question was asked by our chairman, when does your term expire? In other words, we want to get rid of you as quickly as possible.
Can I ask a question? The question is to eliminate the board.
Yes.
If you eliminate the board and do task force teams of task force, what is going to be the decision making of what tasks need to be addressed.
Is it by
I mean, without
rule?
The board to say that these are the problems, these are what we need, what we feel needs to be addressed, what our players need feel needs to be addressed, what the other people we represent. What? Exactly. And so without the advisory board, how is that going to happen? That's my question. If we eliminate the advisory board, how are we going to decide which tasks need to be addressed?
Well, as Dan and I were talking the last time when we were discussing the pros of a task force, and when he supported the idea, was that certainly those people that are very interested in the industry like yourselves, well, what happens is we all get together and we say, okay, these are the situation. This is the situation. These are the issues. These are the kind of issues that we would want to have addressed by a task force. And then we open it up to all the licensees. We open it up to all the manufacturers. We get in this room or we get in an even bigger room and say, this is what we're looking at dealing with. And these are the different issues. These are the different subcommittees that are being created. Choose a subcommittee and go on the subcommittee. Have your regular meetings, and then make a report to the bigger committee. We're doing this right now in charities. Certainly the business division is doing this, and we found it to be a very useful tool.
Well, Andrew, I think what you're saying, I think, you know, both things that we've discussed, whether it's the Bingo Advisory Board or the task force, are viable, potentially viable options for to keep going forward. I think some of the issues have to do with how can we sort of make sure that it's really going to happen, you know, things like that. I think those are the questions in people's minds sometimes. So I think, but I feel like both of the options, whether it's the Bingo Advisory Board or the task force, are viable options, that and that the board can, looking at the things that this paper said they should be doing, can accomplish those things if we get some further direction, as Dave said, from the Secretary of State's office regarding how we go about these issues and what desires that you guys would have regarding those issues.
If the Secretary of State's office hasn't come to the board with anything now, what makes you, because I'll tell you what, I and we agree on this end, I guess, in regards to the advisory board. The point is, to this point, the Secretary of State's office has never come to the board. What makes us think? What should make us think? And now I'm looking at a different end of what should make us think that we're going to have a task force. It's very nice to say, but the point is, if you haven't utilized the tools of the board, why would you utilize the tool of a task force?
That's not true at all. The last rulemaking, there was a task force from the board. The last time there was a statute change, there was a task force from the board. And the rapport with the Bingo community has absolutely nothing to do with the board being in existence. What has to do with our rapport is the mandate from the elected official since I've been here. Mm-hmm. I don't know about the Gestapo era that you talked about, but since I've been here, June 1st, 2000, it came from Donetta Davidson, and her mandate was you work with the Bingo community daily. Not at board meetings, but daily. And I think just about everybody on that board has called our office at one time, and they never mentioned I'm a board member. They call with a question. There are people in the audience that have called us daily mm-hmm. with issues. We always work with them. That has nothing to do with it. And we have come to the board if there have been rulemaking issues, fee increase issues. We have come to the board. Also, we've had task force drawn off from the board that included our office, people from the audience, and board members to discuss rules.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, some of the statutes got to where they are now because of those task force. It has absolutely nothing to do with the board. And those things can still take place today. Anyone can call our office at any time and ask to solve a problem about lockers,
mm-hmm.
about licensees, about new groups, about do they qualify or not, about new games that might be brought into the state. We have never said, well, don't call me. Call the board.
Yeah.
Let's see how the board feels about it.
And the board directs people to you as well.
No. But the reason we've never done that is not because the board exists. The reason we never did that is because Donetta and Gigi and Mike Kaufman said, you work with everyone in the Bingo community. That's why we met with you and your group when you wanted to have the statute go through on promotions.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't because the board said to do it. It was because Mike Kaufman said to do it.
Yeah, and we appreciate that.
The official, and that's the way it should happen.
And we appreciate
all of those meetings can take place with people who are interested in the bingo community in a task force. There's nothing that can't be done in that task force, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even outside of that, honestly, when we've been at board meetings and we've had things come up with rule changes, especially with the last round, the last successfully passed bill that was put out there, we were asked very specifically by Mike Shea and others that were here, look into that, talk to your people, get some information, get feedback, report back to us. I mean,
those are the meetings that were good meetings. So the point is there a middle ground to go ahead and say, okay, this is the start of the task force. We don't have a meeting until something happens. I have groups that would like to be involved that work. There are a lot of people that can't come that want to, because no matter, even when we have the task force, it's probably going to be during the week.
Yeah.
So what winds up happening is, if you go ahead and possibly, I think the middle ground might be to go ahead and say, okay, well, here's the start of our task force as the board, and you call the meetings instead of the board calling the meeting. And whether if the board has things that we do, I mean, I call Rudy a ton, but it's not really board issues, it's more rule issues. But what winds up happening is you have that start where people are still coming to the board and asking questions, and it's addressing everything that everybody has talked about, possibly. I don't know. That was just an idea.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Nick.
Just a couple of comments. A comment to you, then. But I have a question for the board. I mean, for you guys.
For me? For him.
A comment to you is that over the years, we have tried to make this board, so to speak, more utilized more by the organizations. We've had meetings throughout the state to try to get participation in the board meetings.
None.
And it was absolutely a failure. We got no more people at those meetings, and we got the same people at those meetings as we got here when we decided to come back to this and hold our meetings right here in town at 10 o'clock in the morning versus Grand Junction, wherever we went at different hours of the day trying to get the people there. Nobody showed up. Very few, but no interest in it, so to speak. So the board has tried, and when I say we tried to figure out ways to make it successful, it really hasn't been that successful. But what I'm concerned with, and I need to ask the Secretary of State's office about this, is that in the city of Denver, task forces seem to be very successful. Why would we not think that a task force here would not be just as successful as they are for Mayor Hickenlooper as they would be for the Secretary of State's office? That's my question. Maybe you could enhance this a little bit on that.
Certainly that's why the Secretary of State has decided to go down this avenue. He's been using task forces since he was the treasurer. You know, he was treasurer for two terms, and he used them there, and he used them very successfully. And what we found this past summer is the task forces that have been started have been very successful. And that's why he proposes doing something like that for bingo.
So what is who is the task force?
Task force is everybody that's invited. Literally, for charitable solicitations, what we did is we created an executive committee and said, okay, these are the big issues that we're seeing happening, and then we invited everybody. Anybody who wanted to participate, participated. Certainly some people participated more than others. But I tell you what, we're in the process right now of reducing the recommendations of these working committees to actual written recommendations that are going to be strong and that are actually going to be presented directly to the Secretary of State.
Well, when I go ahead and talk to my groups about what took place at the meeting when it was, you know, when it's a good meeting, that's the only way they know.
The only way they know what?
What's going on?
What, by listening to the board meeting?
Well, even if you just know by going ahead and talking to me.
Right.
So people calling me and saying, what exactly is going on? to put on a website that we're having a meeting. I don't know. People don't know the new rules. I mean, there are some things that, you know, as an advisory board, should need to be addressed. We all know that you have to go on the website and you can get a copy. These groups don't know. So when you have an individual group, and that's where it gets difficult, is when you have a group that is within themselves, and I guess you communicate with your whole group and so forth, that we're the liaison to our groups the same way, I think. So I just think that the task force is, if we use as the advisory board as a task force to go ahead, because I'm the first to say that we had a ton of meetings that were a waste of time. It was horrible. The most exciting part was the Pledge of Allegiance. And we basically have no direction as to where to go. So if we say, we get from you guys, this is when we're having the meeting and this is the topic, now you have basically a few people that are trying to get out there to main people. We need letters, we need this, we need that. This is what the Secretary of State's office needs, and we can get them. But to go ahead and get rid of it 100% before we really try to fix the problems that have been here for a while, I think is a tough thing too. You know, and I...
Thanks. Anyone else have anything they'd like to... Tom, you have to go to the mic, please. All of this is live online somewhere.
Wonderful.
It just appears to me that in spite of the varying personalities, that the members of the advisory board really do have their finger on the pulse of the bingo community. And I believe that whatever input they provide, the Secretary of State's office is invaluable. And I'm not sure that you could get as valuable an input from a task force. I just don't see that happening. So, my opinion.
Thanks, Tom. Anyone else want to stand up and...
Can I have a quick question before you adjourn?
Yeah.
When is the hearing before, so that we can go ahead and...
I don't think the hearing date has actually been set yet.
Yeah.
As soon as we find out about the date, we'll certainly let your chairman know, and he can choose to disseminate that information the way he sees fit. He would find out about it the same way we find out about it. We go on their site, and then they actually list the agenda. The legislature's site.
Have they picked a committee for the legislature for it? Do you know what committee is going to...
I'm not sure which oversight committee is actually going to be hearing this report.
Okay. We keep checking. Does anybody have any idea of when the legislature is going to get the appointments made that have been recommended?
I haven't heard anything.
Nobody's heard anything, so we just need to keep checking. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Before we adjourn, do we have anything else besides?
I think we've hashed out a lot here, don't you, Mr. Chairman?
I thought it was good. I think there's some good opinions. There's some people have strong feelings about different issues, and it's good to get those out, regardless of how people state them. I think it's a good thing.
I would agree.
I think that until the hearings, we should schedule another meeting, but I don't think we need one until January, because of the holidays and everything else that are coming up, and unless something else comes up, we can change that. But is everybody in agreement with that on the board?
Yeah.
So what I show on my calendar, I believe, is January 9th is a second Wednesday. Is that right, Rudy? Is that okay with everyone?
Yeah.
Wednesday, January 9th would be the next meeting for the Bingo Advisory Board, which will still be here until at least July. And I really want to exhort and encourage us to really push for those email addresses as much as possible.
Is it possible for us to, whoever's in the industry, inquiring person's email to you so the information can be disseminated to, for example, any of my customers that would want to be on your mailing list?
On the email list? Sure. Thanks. Yeah, it's okay with me. Yeah, mm-hmm. By email you're talking about, or any other way, or what?
Yeah, so I can give you their email. Interested parties and finding out what's going on your email.
So then we can email to them if we don't already have their email address. Yeah, that'd be great.
Get the list from the Secretary of State's office.
Yeah, we can talk to you about doing that. It's a bit of an intensive process, but we can work on putting
yeah. together for you. I mean, to compile them all together is probably the process, right? Whether it's on CD or whether it's emailed or whatever you do, as a group email list would be great, you know. But I think that's going to change the number of people that come here regularly significantly. You know, and that I think that's where we're short of following through a little bit, the board and also maybe the office.
I don't think it's really communication myself, but Mr. Chairman, I think it's they're volunteers. They work, they have other, you know, responsibilities. A lot of people here might be on their own clock, but the volunteer would have to take off work. So I don't think it's just the fact that they don't get the information.
Oh, I agree, Rudy, but also one big factor is they don't get the information very easily as far as knowing, because they can just see it because it comes to their computer and they can read it and throw it out or not throw it out. You know, and that's just how it goes. You know. Okay, great.
We had a meeting in Grand Junction. We had 10 people. We had a meeting in North Glen and we had 8 people. So, and it was at night. So they weren't working.
Mm-hmm.
So why weren't they there?
I don't have an answer for that. Anybody want to? I think we're done, are we not?
Second.
Yeah.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, meeting's over. Thank you, everybody. Thanks, Andrew, Rudy, Shannon, Patrick. I see. I should have got a donut, Patrick. I told you I should have got a donut.
That's right.